And now we actually have Kevin Karp back on the podium. He should be coming towards us. He's going to talk us about some of the key learnings they have had in terms of IPv6 adoption. And there's always those things that catch you occasionally. So, Kevin, welcome again.
Thank you, Murray.
Thank you.
Hopefully there's no need for any additional microphones this time. I've been involved with IPv6 now for just on 2 years now. Tony approached me about the middle of 2007 to talk about setting up an establishment, a commercial enterprise to promote IPv6 products. And the first comment that I made to Tony when he first approached me was, we have to make sure that this is for business. It has to be commercial. It has to be providing something that's of commercially valuable benefit. So from day one, we've always focused on the commercial aspects of IPv6. So you're not going to be surprised when I tell you that why should a company or government department commit to undertaking this journey of transition to IPv6? From my standpoint and from the standpoint of the management of any organisation, a government department or company, there's got to be some benefit that's going to be gained out of it. While V4 addresses are still available, as they are today, they may not be available for very long, and there's all sorts of risk reasons for not looking into it, but while they're still available, unless there's some benefit to be gained by going to IPv6, it's going to be very difficult to convince management to set aside a budget to proceed to actually undertake the journey that we've all been talking about. So it's critically important that any organisation looks at their own operations and says, well, how can I use this new technology to gain a benefit? Now, that's got there's some upsides and some downsides when you look at it from that perspective, and that's what I'd like to take a look at today, because we get to find out we've had an opportunity to observe what some of our customers are doing, and we can see what the way their thinking is working. First issue that we encountered, let me explain where these concerns came from. One of the things that we've done is create the VIC6 testbed network in Victoria. And that's been set up with seed funding from the Victorian state government to the tune of some $350,000-odd. And a certain amount of that money was put aside, and part of our requirement was that we needed to identify industries that we were going to speak to, industry sectors that we're going to speak to, and that we would have this outreach program to speak to industry sectors. And the three sectors that were identified were health, the finance industry, and the automotive industry. So we've been out there speaking to a lot of industry players. And one of the first concerns that we came across was they wanted to have this question answered: will my existing solution still work once we've made this journey to IPv6? Their concern, their want, is they don't want any loss of existing investment in their current infrastructure. Now, thankfully, that's a relatively straightforward answer that we can give. Yeah, of course they'll still work. But it's still a question. We're surprised at the number of times that it keeps on coming up and the intensity with which it's asked. So you have to prepare yourself when you go and speak to your management. You have to prepare yourself for that question when it arises. You've got to be able to reassure people that, yes, everything's still going to be okay. And the good news here is that, as you've already heard today, implementing a dual-stack implementation of IPv6, IPv4 at a superficial level is relatively straightforward to do. We've all heard the statement, it just works. So if you just want to do it at a fairly surface level, no problems. You'll be able to do that without any real issues. An example of this, you heard Glenn earlier on talk about his reverse proxy establishment of V6 equivalents of his V4 sites. We've taken that idea and commercialised it, and we're calling it frictionless websites, so that companies and organisations can have a V6 version of their website. It involves a zero footprint, a zero touch on their existing V4 website. No touch to the existing website at all. Doesn't interfere with any of the existing relationships between web developers and hosting companies and all that sort of stuff. It's an almost zero touch. The only change that needs to happen is an extra DNS Quad A record needs to be created, and that's about it. We do all the rest, and that's great. Doesn't break anything that's already there. Gets you your V6 version of your website up and running real quick. It can be done in a matter of a few days, and wow, that's great. Terrific. Or is it? I don't think it is so great. It is great because you've done this superficial thing. Yes, you can say your website's V6 and it's V4. Terrific. That's got a big tick in that box. But is that the real benefit that you could get? Is that the only benefit that you could get? How are you going to justify to your management to say, oh, well, now we've got a V6 and a V4 website, we can get to all of the internet community? Well, that's great. And as the V6 portion of the network expands, yes, I guess you're gaining that, but you already had that anyway. Uh-oh, what does that mean? Do I have to do something there? I'll try going backwards. No, that didn't do anything. Okay, well, I'll keep on talking. What's that?
It's the link to the projector.
Oh, there we go. I've got something here. Okay. I think I'm back one now. So there we go. So I'm not sure that just re-implementing what we've already got in V4, I don't think that's good enough. I don't think that we're taking off the V4 hat and putting on the V6 way of thinking and implementing that innovation that Tony Hayne was talking about this morning and exploiting all of the extra benefits and things that we can do in V6 that we can't do in V4. I don't think we're doing that if all we're doing is reproducing a superficial dual-stack implementation. And I don't think that your management is being told about all of the extra benefits and extra competitive advantage that they can be gaining if all we do is take off, if all we do is re-implement what we've got in V4. I think we've got to do a lot more than that. And if you're going to convince your management or your administration that, yes, we've got to go to V6, you've now got to firmly put on the V6 hat and start thinking in a V6 mode and start exploiting the advantages that V6 provides. Now, this rolls off the tongue really easily, but I think it's, in fact, extremely difficult. I've been exposed to V6 now for 2 years, and I think I'm just at the beginning to understand how V6 can be used to gain commercial benefit. I think there's still a hell of a lot of lessons out there to be learnt, and we're a long way away from closing the book on that. We've got profligate IP addresses. We can do things with that capability. We can implement things that we would never seriously consider doing in a V4 world, either because it's prohibitively expensive or because it's just flat out not possible to do. Let me give you an example. And that's, let's say you've got a service. I'll take mail as an example, even though it's not a particularly good example. If you've got a NAT environment and you've got one V4 address globally exposed to the world, let's say it's just one, you're a relatively small organisation, and then you've got a requirement for another department or another group within your organisation to have another mail server. How are you going to run two mail servers, both of which need to listen on port 25, two mail servers on one globally addressable V4 address? Well, simple answer is, you're not. You can't. You need two globally addressable V4 addresses to do that, or you need to be doing something very complicated to achieve that. Whereas if you've got V6, what's the problem? You've got all the IP addresses that you could want. Every machine in your network's got its own IP address that's globally addressable. No NAT, peer-to-peer, great. You could have as many mail servers as you wanted to have. Now, I'm not suggesting to you that organisations should be having more than one mail server, but the point is that you've got something that's technically possible that would be much more difficult, much more expensive to do in the V4 world. Global accessibility, free of NAT, means a lot to us, and I don't think that we're even at the beginnings of understanding those meanings. and we're on a journey here of needing to learn these things. So the challenge for all of us in this room is to open up the imagination and the innovation and put on our V6 cap and start thinking that way. Earlier on today, we've been hearing about the need, the soft problems that are going to occur and the need for training. That's happened again. No signals. Okay. I think that message has been emphasised a lot today, and it needs to be emphasised even more. You will find that there are many small things that occur that you didn't expect to be a problem. You've done your superficial implementation. Wow, that's great, we're doing that. But there'll be lots and lots of downstream small issues that you just didn't expect to occur that all of a sudden are representing large problems. And I'm going to give you... As represented by the slide, yep. I'm desperately treading water right now. I'm hoping that something magical happens and the slides reappear. And there we go. It's a greater technical challenge to do V6 right. You've got to plan on the basis that you do need to do V6 right. Otherwise, you're not going to get those benefits that we were talking about, the V6 peculiar benefits. And they're the things that you're going to need to do. So those soft issues that you're going to encounter that turn out to be quite difficult, you've got to plan on encountering those from now. Even small problems can be large, and I'm going to give you an example here of a small problem that turns out to be a large one. About a year ago, Tony Hill and I went and gave a presentation to a TAFE, a College of Technical and Further Education in Sydney. And we gave a talk to lecturers, about 8 or 9 lecturers from the IT department. These people are training the next generation of network administrators. And Tony went through his presentation, I went through my presentation. I'm looking at the audience, only 8 or 9 people, and one particular fellow was in the audience just shaking his head. You could just see that, you know, he was rejecting what we were saying. And afterwards, I went up and spoke to him, and I said, I saw, you know, that you were shaking your head while we were talking. Is there a concern that you've got? He just shook his head and he looked at me and he said, well, my students simply aren't going to understand this. And I said, well, what do you mean? Is there something in particular? He says, well, you've got IP addresses up there and they've got letters in them and they've got colons in them. And I'm thinking, yes, okay, what's the issue? So I asked him that and he says, well, they've never seen IP addresses with numbers in them. They don't understand hex. They will never understand it. And I thought, well, this is the next generation of network administrators we're talking about here. And I thought, well, this must be isolated. This must be just a one-off opinion from an individual. Can't really be true. Over the next few months, I kept on encountering the same problem over and over again. To the extent that I met one individual that he's actually got a team of people doing implementations for V6, and he said to me, oh, we've solved that problem. And because he had encountered it as well. And I said to him, great. How did you train them up to understand hex? Oh, no, we didn't do that. We've just banned the letters. We're not going to use any IP addresses with letters in them. Of course, that solves half the problem. He got rid of the letters. I don't know how he's going to get rid of the columns. That's going to be another problem altogether. A bit more creativity is going to be required there. Now, that's drastic, it's insane, I know, but that's one individual solution to the problem. I'm certainly not recommending that, but I am pointing out to you that something that, at least I thought hex, university grade or TAFE grade, network administration training, 3 years, 4 year courses that they're doing, surely they'll understand hex. Don't assume that. And this is just one example. I'm not trying to say that this is the worst example that you'll have, but I'm just trying to give you an example that you can't make assumptions. It is a different world. You do need to prepare yourself for that from now. So I'd like to thank you for your attention, and I'm sure Murray will ask if there's any questions.
Thank you very much indeed, Kevin. Is there a question?
By the way, with the schools that I was talking about earlier on this morning, we're thinking of running a competition where the school kids get asked to use the letters to come up with IP addresses that mean something. Dead beef is one of the words that I think someone... Who was it? Was it Andrew that you said Dead Babe Cafe, was it, or something like that, using the letters. I'm sure that the school kids will get more, even more creative than that.
Thanks very much indeed, Kevin. That's all right.